Thank you very much, Bernie. David, you don't have a presentation, do you? Just going to comment. So thank you, Bernie, for very eloquently capturing all of the privacy and data-related and potentially prejudicial issues and concerns, some of which were expressed by others, but certainly you fleshed out the picture. David Snyder will now speak. He's Vice President, Property Casualty and Insurers Association of America. He's currently serving as the VP for PCI, and which is composed of more than 1,000 member companies representing the broadest cross-section of insurers of any national trade association. Again, owing to the limited amount of time, without further ado, please, David, share your thoughts.
Thanks very much. Can everyone hear me? Great. Well, I know I have two jobs. First of all, not to repeat everything that everyone else has said, number one, and number two, not to give you indigestion. So hopefully I'll achieve both of those objectives, and I will be extremely brief. You know, just when I thought the insurance industry had come up with a risk classification system and an approach that would improve highway safety, reduce air pollution, reduce congestion, and provide for more accurate risk assessment, just when I thought we'd done all that, we might actually receive a few kudos. The reality is, I think what we've just heard is an excuse for regulating and hyper-regulating even these activities. So I think one of the things that we need to do is, first of all, understand that there's incredible social value from what we're talking about here. And here I'm going to approach this not just from the standpoint of someone who represents insurance companies, but as a local and regional transportation policymaker and as someone who has responded to far too many motor vehicle crashes. The reality is that the upside here is absolutely phenomenal. I would argue that we are on the edge of a revolution, not only in risk classification and how insurance companies do their business, but rather the contribution that an insurance system can make to larger social values such as highway safety, reduction of air pollution, and the overall improvement of the quality of life. So whatever we do, as they say in medicine, let's do no harm. Let's find ways to allow insurance companies to achieve these objectives and not weight them down with so much regulation and so much cost that it becomes unfeasible to go in this direction. So that would be the first point that I would make. Secondly, and here I want to do a little bit of looking to the future. And my companies don't discuss what they're going to do in the future, so these are a couple of my own thoughts. For those who want to move toward this system and away from the more controversial risk classification factors of the past, you can't really do that when you're sort of operating two systems. So I think the greatest benefit from this will be when all policyholders are under, and this becomes the more general system applicable to all policyholders. Now, the companies are not asking for that now and may never ask for it, but the reality is if we want to solve once and for all the controversies over risk classification, one thing we ought to think about is why not allow this system to be applied to all policyholders? The second point I would make is that, as well known, it's just not about miles driven. It's who's driving those miles, where they're driving, what circumstances they're driving on. And so limitations on such things such as use of territory or geography are really, frankly, counterproductive because they remove a critical risk factor. Because recall that an automobile insurance policy not only pays for what you do, but it pays for what others do to you. And so if you're truly measuring risk, it seems to me that territory in the place of driving is important. Next, I would hopefully add some additional factors, whether the seatbelt is being used, for example, because we realize from the latest data that even after all this time, after all the seatbelt laws and after all the education, 50% of passengers killed in motor vehicle crashes are still unrestrained. So there's a tremendous opportunity for safety there as well. So I wanted to put a couple things on the table, just talk about the progress that I think we can make. A word of caution, let's proceed with this in a cooperative manner. Let's not put straitjackets on companies or require them to all do things the same way at this point in the development. Clearly, certain things have to be assured. States have rating laws and risk classification laws, and obviously they need to be complied with. But I think we're on the brink of something that will have tremendous value, not only in the insurance mechanism, but for society at large. And accordingly, I want to thank the NAIC for hosting this event. I want to thank all the participants, and I hope that we can move forward so that you won't have to hear Bernie Birnbaum and Dave Snyder yet again arguing over risk classification. Thank you.
G5. Our last magic number is CINS3. CINS3. Please write it down. If you are seeking designation renewal credits, you will enter your three numbers when you submit your evaluation. The evaluation form will be sent by email after the event. CINS3. Okay. I have a whole bunch of questions for which we do not have time. I do have a good generic question to ask the entire panel, but I want to find out how many people in the audience may have questions that they want to ask, because I absolutely want to make sure we have time for that. Okay, so there's enough of a catalyst there that once you two or three get going, the rest of the room can take over. So I'm going to ask one generic question for everybody to comment quickly and then open up the floor, okay? And my question is, so I meant to say, I don't know if I did say, that I'm not a huge fan of UBI, even though I'm participating in the program and I have recommended it to others. There is a little bit of an ickiness there, although I'm so boring at this point in my life that I'm perfectly happy to stick anything on my car to get to pay less insurance, so I don't really, it doesn't bother me in the slightest. Although, occasionally, it has fallen out, and it is located down by my brake and accelerator pedal, but I'm not going to dwell on that. But there are a variety of issues, all of which have been alluded to, that might be limiting why this has not become a mass market yet. And clearly, we want it to become a mass market in some way, shape, or form, but in not such a way that it is unfair, unpleasant, or in any way prejudicial to the general public. This was the first time I was hearing from Dave, actually, the idea that really it's only going to make sense when everybody is participating, and that is the ultimate objective, I think. So I want to get a quick comment from everybody before we open the floor about what each panelist thinks is holding back, because there are a wide range of issues from, you know, the broker factor to technologies, you know, OBD2, smartphone, installed device, you know, a cigarette lighter plug-in device, a wide range of applications, regulatory issues. You know, it's not uniform in every state. What does each panel member think the biggest obstacle is? So you can start it off, Jim.
All right, that's a great question. I think that the technology, the cost of the technology, That's a huge impact on insurers. And then also the fact that there's the proprietary nature of their scoring models and exactly what they do. Folks are very, very hesitant on our working group, for example, to share any information whatsoever because they're afraid they're going to give away their secret sauce. And so until there is a time when somebody is making that secret sauce very explicit so that it's known, I think you're going to have a great deal of difficulty.
Okay, Bernie.
Okay, is it working now?
My sense is that there are two or three things that are slowing things down. One is that, you know, half the people are thinking, well, I'm not the ones who are going to get the benefits of this. You know, I either drive more or I drive at odd hours, so why would I want to do that? But I think the main impediment is the sort of the black box nature of the process. I think that if this was something where it'd say you can lower your insurance by driving fewer miles, we're going to charge you by the mile, then there'd be a huge demand for this. And in response to a huge demand, you'd see insurers rushing even more so than they are now.
So to me, I think it's the sort of the lack of transparency of the product itself.
Sandra?
I think that from what we've seen from a consumer perspective, the privacy concerns certainly outweigh any potential benefits, especially for older people. I think that's a little bit different for younger people because they're more used to technology and from sharing everything. From the insurer's perspective, I think there are certainly concerns regarding the regulatory environment and what exactly, you know, how it's going to be perceived and what questions and what data and how much information they're going to have to disclose and will it become public or will it be kept confidential, et cetera, so forth.
Alan?
I could say a number of things, but I'd say the number one thing to me is just the complexity of the whole thing. Not only in terms of getting the data, but figuring out what the data means, marketing, processing the data, informing and negotiating with regulators, just every element of it is layers of complexity more than we've got now on a system that we're used to, and it's just taking longer. I mean, all these other things I agree with as well.
Just plug the box in the OBD2 port. There's nothing to it, Alan. Robin?
In addition to things that may have been said already, I would just say that I think some of the leading insurers have done a fairly poor job at point of sale of marketing the product to consumers, of explaining. In other words, if you think about the agent or person who's really facing the insured, I don't think that they've been informed and trained well enough, in my experience, to explain this to the consumers in such a way that consumers feel very comfortable with it. The other thing that I see holding insurers back is the fact that they have limited access to useful data to make decisions around this. As anything that's innovative, the innovators have most of the information, and the other people who want to follow in their footsteps have limited access to that information. And because of that, because they have to satisfy certain regulatory requirements before they can file and be approved to do something like this, they need some way to innovate in a world in which they don't really have the information yet to prove that the innovation makes sense.
Yeah, as we talked earlier, Robin, it's even the organizations that have embraced the technology remain a little bit ambivalent about the technology when it comes to the training of their salespeople. Maybe they only want to use it to get new customers or to retain someone who's about to stray. At the last minute, you can throw the offer out there. And I think that's changing a little bit, like Progressive's indicating, look, everybody's welcome. You know, we're not just trying to take away customers from the competition. That might change things. But I think that's part of what you're driving at. And I have to double down on that point because I feel strongly about that. Dave, your thought?
Yeah, I think actually while we focus on barriers, we ought to focus on the progress that's been made so far. And I think you've heard some very interesting commentary about the extent to which these programs are in place. One expects some bumps in the road, if you will, early on when we make major changes like this. And so some of it's expected. I mean, I think some potential things that might slow it down would be too much regulation, sort of insisting on a one-size-fits-all approach. Another thing that could slow it down, and I got to be honest about this, even though that I've advocated, again, not that my companies have asked for that, but I think ultimately, if we're going to get the true social value and the true insurance value, and you want to get past this constant fight over risk classification, is to have all the policyholders in some kind of program like this. But I also recognize that the public has a long way to go before they're going to accept that. I think that's just reality. So that's why I think the programs that have been put in place have been voluntary for good reason. I think the public is accepting this more and more. Certainly the theoretical arguments are very clear, both in terms of insurance issues and in terms of larger social policy, but we have a significant gap to close there.
I think this is the perfect situation, the perfect example of how regulation can enhance the market. If regulators were to establish clear guidelines on data sharing, data ownership, privacy, that would give consumers a lot of confidence because they'd know that there was some standards, that the issues had been addressed. This is exactly the type of regulatory activity that promotes competition, that promotes market acceptance. And I think the absence of it is one of the things that's holding things back.
Okay. Now those people, all right, you got your hand up very fast.
Thank you. All right, I'm going to cheat with a two-part question. So, sorry.
What's the deal?
Hey, what's with that? Okay, just this. For those who will receive an adverse impact for this potentially, or, you know, for those who are going to be the ones that are braking hard and making too many left turns, has there been a study that shows, are they the same people that are already getting the higher rates, such as youthful drivers or inner city drivers? So that's for those adversely impacted. And on those who are getting a beneficial impact, Roger mentioned he's a boring guy, so he doesn't mind his every movement being tagged along. So there's whatever the opposite of adverse selection is, it's the people who maybe are already the best drivers anyway. Are we seeing those already good drivers' claims spiraling downward? Because as Bernie mentioned, unless claims are being driven down, there really isn't a beneficial impact. So one for the beneficial, one for the adverse people.
Someone want to jump in?
I can address that in part, in that one of the things that we looked at, if we did this and all we did was replicate the current rating system that's in place, there wouldn't be a whole lot of reason for insurers to spend millions of dollars to adopt a program like this. It has to create some kind of lift or separation, prediction of loss in addition to the current rating algorithm. And in point of fact, what we've shown is in the early versions of scores that we've created for this, that the R squared, which is a measurement of goodness of fit, how much is this correlated, 100% being perfect correlation, zero being they're completely uncorrelated, that the R squared is actually 3%, which would largely say that this is a rating factor that predicts information within any rate class that is largely in addition to and completely separate from the current classification system. So you say, would it find those people who are already rated as the highest drivers? The answer is within those rated highest rated drivers, this would separate those between the people who really are causing the rate for that class to be bad and those who shouldn't be in that classification cost factor because they have much lower loss costs than those people.